views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Get ready for a game changer. Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, Sarah will bring you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Now here's your host, Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. Today we have an amazing episode for you. This is actually a two-part episode, but it's an interview with Dr. Bill Andrews. It is an explosive episode. He brings amazing information, new information, things that will change mankind forever. You will not want to miss these episodes. It's a two-part episode, actually, because the interview is longer than can play on 1 hour of radio. Be sure to listen to both episodes. You will hear the first one today, and the next one will play on Friday on the Global Star Satellite, or you can get the second episode on my website at sarahwestall.com, as well as the first one. And you can also hear it on my YouTube channel or any of the other podcast places that, it, you know, 90 plus channels that I have it on podcast. But let's not waste much more time because this is a long interview and you're going to love it. Here now is Dr. Bill Andrews along with his team, Jay Park and Catherine Oakes. Hi, Bill. Welcome to the program.
Hello, Sarah. It's an honor to be back on. I really enjoyed our last time, and I'm just happy we're doing it again.
Yeah, I was so interested in what you had to say, so I really want you back to see where you're at with your project. I know you were so close to getting to that mark, that landmark spot that you're getting to, but you have your business colleagues with you today as well to help with this interview. Can you tell me who you have with you and what their roles are and welcome them?
Well, I have Catherine Oakes. Catherine, you want to say hello?
Yes. Hello, Sarah. How are you?
Good. Hello. Thank you. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
She is our marketing head, and working specifically with Sierra Sciences. Jay Park. Jay, you want to say hello?
Hi, everyone. This is Jay.
He is our marketing partner. His company, Defy Time, is responsible for marketing all our products, working with Catherine.
Oh, excellent.
He's actually, I think, in New Zealand right now, but his home base is South Korea. So I'm here in Reno, Nevada.
Okay, excellent. And where are you, Catherine?
I am in Reno, Nevada as well.
Okay, so you're in the country. Okay, well, let's dive right into some of these questions. I think the majority of them at first will be for Bill, but as we go through, I'm sure you'll jump in where you need to. But let's first talk about what is your goal in general, and what is the passion driving you, Bill, to get to that goal?
Well, I'm trying to end one of the most miserable things that exist today in this world, and that's aging. Most people just aren't aware of what aging actually is. People think we age gracefully and this is something normal and we should be happy about it and stuff. But what people don't know is that out there, thousands of hundreds, maybe millions of people locked in hospices, assisted care living homes, things like that. These people can't take care of themselves. They're miserable. Their families have often alienated them because, you know, it's just they're no fun anymore. But these people are just put away to die. And it is a horrible, horrible thing. But it's not just aging. It's also diseases. We all suffer from diseases. Again, we think this is normal. It is. I guess normal is the correct word. But is it the way things are supposed to be? No, I think it's not the way things are supposed to be. I think that aging is a miserable, miserable thing, and we have to find a way to end that. And I've been aware of that ever since I was a little kid, and I started learning that people were dying and that someday I was going to die. And I just decided, you know, I think when I was 10 years old, that I was going to try to focus my life on doing something about this. It's 55 years later, but I'm still working on it.
So is your goal to, for you, do you want to live forever, or do you just want to have a better life while you do live?
Well, I definitely want a better life when I do live. I should qualify that there's no way that I'm interested in having a lot of old people sitting in hospital beds with tubes sticking in and out of them. My goal is to make certain that everybody is very healthy. I want us all to be the equivalent of 24-year-olds, feeling 24, looking 24, behaving 24, and be as healthy as a 24-year-old. That's essentially what I'm trying to do.
That would be amazing. Now that I'm in my mid-40s, I'm like, well, that would be amazing. So will you give an overview of what your work entails and how you're going about trying to find a solution to telomere lengthening?
Okay, well, first of all, I should qualify that I believe that telomere lengthening is the solution to curing aging. And so if I could first just define what a telomere is, telomeres are very small things inside of us. When you zoom in on a human being, you can see that first a human's made up of 100 trillion cells. And most of the theories on why we age say that we age because our cells age. And so the question is, why do our cells age? That's what I'm trying to ask. Well, if you zoom in further, you see that every cell contains a nucleus, and then inside these nuclei are found chromosomes. The chromosomes are where all of our genes are that give us our hair color, our eye color, et cetera. And a typical chromosome is made up of a long DNA molecule. The DNA is made up of, like, it's a long string of beads. The beads are called bases. And these typical average size of a chromosome is probably 100 million bases in length. And it's the sequence of these bases that tell you what your eye color is, your hair color, et cetera. Those are the genes. Well, now think of this long string of beads as a shoelace. And we know at the caps of our shoelace, we have these things called aglets, the caps on our shoelaces, and they protect the shoelace. Well, at the very end of our DNA molecules, there's something equivalent to the aglet. They're called telomeres. Now, we know that when the aglets on our shoelaces get short, our shoelace starts to fall apart. Well, the same is true on our telomeres. When our telomeres start to get short, our chromosomes start to fall apart, and they start to get chromosome rearrangements and mutations. Typical, sometimes when you look at really old cells, you can find that there's as many as like 10,000 different rearrangements of the chromosomes. And all these things are mutations that can cause all kinds of issues like cancer, many, many kinds of diseases. Now, it's not just that, though, because even along the way, as your telomeres get shorter and shorter, it causes changes in the gene patterns, or the expression patterns, the way the genes are produced, let's say, or like they're read. A gene is typically read like you read computer code, and that goes and causes a formation of a protein that probably gives you the pigment, your eye color, et cetera. But when the telomeres get short, the ability to read these genes changes. And this leads to a lot of age-related effects, like visual things that you can see and non-visual things that you can see that are associated with aging. So telomeres do play a big role like this. Now, it wasn't until the 1990s that people began to realize that the shortening of the telomeres was the cause of aging, not the result of aging. Now, in your shoelaces, this is where the analogy of the shoelace falls apart. with your shoelace when the caps of your shoelaces get short. That's a result of aging, not a cause of aging. But in the chromosomes, it's the cause of aging. The chromosomes get shorter and they cause all the changes in the aging. And we showed this in the mid-1990s by discovering an enzyme called telomerase that lengthens telomeres. Now, this telomerase had been speculated a lot to be in humans, but nobody had ever been able to figure out what it was or how it works. But it had to exist in our, let's say, reproductive cells, because if our telomeres got short in our reproductive cells, our children would be born as old as we are, or at least they'd be born with shorter telomeres than we have. And if telomeres keep getting shorter, you essentially don't have a chromosome left anymore. So we had to have some way in our reproductive cells to keep our telomeres from shortening. So I led a research team at Geron Corporation in the mid-1990s that discovered this enzyme, telomerase. And then when we put this telomerase enzyme into normal human cells, we were able to show that they completely stopped aging. In fact, we showed that their aging got reversed because we actually made the telomeres a lot longer than, let's say, a telomere from a newborn baby. And so the cells actually got younger. Well, this was later verified by taking human skin and growing it on the back of a mouse and treating it with telomerase. The skin got younger in every way imaginable. And when old skin got younger, young skin, it had no effect on the young skin. The young skin just remained young and viable. Later, even, Dr. Ron DiPinno at Harvard then lengthened telomeres in mice and showed that in old mice and showed that they got young in every way imaginable. Their brain function came back. Their ability to breed came back. Their energy came back. There's a lot of things you can find on the market that actually will make old people more energetic. I don't call that curing aging, but a lot of people do. I think curing aging has to be more than that. But in this case of these mice, they did get more than just their energy coming back. They saw aging reverse in every way imaginable. Now, unfortunately...
Well, how about like the female? Yeah. Can I ask you a question? The female mice, you know, were you for the reproduction breeding part... can they keep breeding even though they might have a finite amount of eggs, or is that
So I'm not true. An expert on mice. I don't know how many eggs a mice have, but in humans, menopause really isn't anything to do with aging. It's just, it's time correlated with time, but it's a counting mechanism. A woman, when she's born, she has 430 cells destined to become egg cells, and she never makes any more. That's it. So when she reaches puberty, she starts to lose one once a month, and then 450 months later, she reaches menopause. So that has actually nothing to do with aging. It's just you have a certain number of cells that you can breed with, and you lose them once a month. And when you lose them, you're still the same person. You just don't have those eggs anymore. So telomeres.
So basically for a female, they could breed again. They just wouldn't be able to use their eggs.
So if we lengthen the telomeres, a woman in her 50s wouldn't be able to have a kid again, but stem cell technology will enable, I know people working in that field that are making it so that you can take a woman's skin cells, de-differentiate them doing a process called induced pluripotency. And then it's also called genetic reprogramming. And then differentiate them into egg cells. And so a woman in her probably 80s could have a child someday soon, especially if she's 80 years old and looks and behaves and feels 24. Everything's covered, I hope. What were you going to ask next?
Wow. No, that's incredible. So last time we talked, you believed that you were very close to finding a full solution. Where are you now in that regard?
Exactly where we were, because the big obstacle right now is the funding. But I think things have changed drastically lately, and that's because of the incorporation of Jay Park, who's on this call. His company has taken over the responsibility of finding all the funding that we would need through marketing of discoveries that we have made in the past. So I'm real excited about the fact that this, I think, could turn around really, really quickly. And I'm hoping to start generating funding to continue our research full bore in possibly as early as May of this year. And then we've always been 1 to 3 years away from absolutely having something that would be the holy grail of aging. And by that, I mean, when somebody like Betty White walks out on stage again and looks 24 years old and feels and looks and behaves 24 again, I'm going to say we have cured the aging process. And I think that's possible. We have something to test on humans in 1 to 3 years from now.
Okay, so what will you need to see before you believe that you've found what you're looking for?
As I just said, I'd have to see somebody like Betty White look and feel and behave. But because
there's
a lot of work going on trying to identify biomarkers of aging, and none of them make any sense really. There's a lot of people right now saying that the only way to cure aging is to first figure out how to define aging. And I don't know. I personally, since I was 10 years old, knew exactly how to define aging. All you got to do is look in a mirror. And so that's what we got to change. But it's not just looks. It's also physical ability and behavior and lifespan. Okay. So if you look and feel 24, but you still die at 90 from old age, that's not curing aging, but that's sure better than not. But I think we'll actually see a side effect of, because I like to look at it this way. We are trying to make people feel better, look better, behave better. The side effect will be they live longer. So I don't know how long people would live. I wouldn't be surprised if people live to be 150, 500 years old, but I have no idea how to know what the age will be, but it's something we'll find out. So when I start seeing somebody, my definition has always been when somebody, and I usually use myself for this one, when somebody runs a 7-minute mile when they're 130 years old, I will have called aging cured. I don't care what biomarkers have changed or et cetera.
That would be a good marker. But what are you looking for in a petri dish when you're doing your research?
Well, we do look at genetic, at gene expression patterns. So, for instance, there's 25,000 different genes in a human cell. And when you look at all the cells at once, display them all on a chart where, you know, it usually color-coded, where red or green would be genes produced at high levels, red produced at low levels, and colors in between are somewhere in between. When you do that, when you look at all 25,000 genes at once and you see this pattern, you'll see a lot of like green and red dots, for instance. You'll see that there's a very distinctive pattern for young cells. But when you test old cells, you find that pattern changes a lot. Some of the greens go to red, some of the reds go to green, and et cetera, et cetera. And so what we do when we are looking to see if we've slowed down the aging or reversed the aging, we are looking at something like that. We're looking at the pattern, but we haven't really figured out what genes are affecting aging or what genes are caused by aging. So we just look at the patterns in general. But when we see an old expression pattern suddenly go to a young expression pattern in a petri dish, we call that cells getting younger. I think that's not proof that they're younger, but I would put it at the 99% level. But we also look at something called the Hayflick limit. Leonard Hayflick discovered in the 1960s that when you take a human cell and grow it in a petri dish, it can only divide a certain number of times before it stops growing. It reaches a phase called senescence. He found that when he took cells from a 10-year-old, they could divide, I think maybe it was 40 times. When he takes a cell from a 90-year-old, it can only divide like 5 times. And then any age in between would be some number of divisions in between. So it kind of said that somehow our cells know how old they are. That's one of the first reasons I started saying that human cells have some kind of clock ticking inside of them because of the studies that were discovered by Leonard Hayflick. And so we also, when we do a treatment on a human cell, we also look to make certain that it exceeds that Hayflick limit. The Hayflick limit, when we do the math on a human, so we have our body's filled with cells, but when we look at those cells, the telomeres get shorter and shorter at a very specific rate. And when we do the math on that, it says that if you have the perfect genetics and lead the perfect lifestyle, it's impossible for a human to live beyond 125 years because of the telomere, because your cells reach the Hayflick limit and there's at the slowest possible rate to get to 125. There's only two people that have ever in recorded documented history exceeded 120. And the longest was Jean Calment in France, who lived to be 122. I don't think even if she survived longer, she couldn't have lived beyond 125 because her telomeres would have stopped her. Now, that's if you have really good genetics and lead a really good lifestyle. And I hear that Jean Calment didn't even lead a really healthy lifestyle, but she still made it to 122. But a lot of people do things that accelerate their aging, and that's everything from, you know, lack of exercise to smoking to obesity, sugar, all those kind of things. Everything you've already known that accelerates aging and makes you unhealthy has now been shown to be also the cause of accelerated telomere shortening. And so there might be a real direct connection there, that one of the main reasons why an unhealthy lifestyle is bad for you is because it accelerates your telomere shortening, which causes you to get older faster. And we've all seen smokers who've been smoking all their lives. They all look older than their friends their same age that haven't been smoking.
Yeah, that's true. So the sense research, which you know is Aubrey de Grey's foundation, has identified seven deadly things that cause death. And he's calling them the things that are associated with telomeres. I say tele because came from the telecommunications. Telomere division obsessed cells is one of those deadly things. And he's saying that using telomere control is the answer to solving this problem. But, you know, roughly a year and a half ago, this is a big progress for him, because roughly a year and a half ago when I had him on the show, he was not convinced that telomere control was the answer, but now he is. So are you working with them closely? And what do you think of what they're doing?
I would be working a lot closer if I had more funding. But I believe that Aubrey de Grey is the smartest person on the planet when it comes to aging. But Aubrey's focusing on a lot of different things that cause aging, everything. And he's trying to put together a model about what causes the age so that we can reverse all these things that cause us to age. So I communicate with Aubrey all the time. In fact, I've sponsored his conferences and things like that. And I've offered to do a lot of research for Aubrey in support of his model, to answer the questions about his models. But the funding's been the issue. But what Aubrey is doing, which I really like, is he's making a list of all the questions that need to be asked. Okay, because there's a lot we don't know. And one of the things, one of the questions is long telomeres good for you or bad for you? I mean, it's will long telomeres increase your risk of cancer or will they decrease your risk of cancer? Well, my background is cancer. I spent many years in the cancer industry, and I actually was awarded second place for United States Inventor of the Year in 1997 for my cancer research. So I focused a lot on cancer. I believe that it's that telomeres, short telomeres, are one of the major causes of cancer. I believe, as I said before, when telomeres get really short, it causes our chromosomes to start falling apart in the shape of chromosome rearrangements and mutations, and these cause cancer. I believe that keeping telomeres long is a way to prevent cancer. But other things that happen is that when telomeres get short, our immune system loses the ability to fight cancer. And if we already have cancer, if our telomeres get short, our the cancer cells, let's say the telomeres in our cancer cells get short, they can mutate so much that there's always going to be some survivor, no matter what you hit the cells with. And then again, I can add on even metastasis. Metastasis is when a cancer starts to spread to the rest of your body. That requires additional mutations. By the way, every single cancer ever discovered has always been the result of a mutation. So mutations have to occur to make a cell cancer. So you want to decrease the rate of mutations, but the further mutations will allow metastasis to allow the cancer to spread. And short telomeres are a tremendously great way of inducing mutations. So keeping telomeres long is the solution. And the way to keep telomeres long is to extend them with telomerase. There's a lot of publications, a lot of scientific peer-reviewed publications on correlating telomere lengths to cancer and aging and stuff like that. And just like a lot of other things, for every paper you can find that says one thing, you can find another paper that says the exact opposite, even though they're scientifically peer-reviewed. So Aubrey and me, we're constantly faced with this tug-of-war, you know, and trying to answer the questions. We have some people saying one way, some people saying the other way. But in the scientifically peer-reviewed literature, the number of papers that say that short telomeres and lack of telomerase causes cancer is 100-fold more than the number of papers that say that long telomeres and telomerase causes cancer. So my job, because I actually feel like I work for Aubrey. Aubrey's, as I said in our last interview, Aubrey's kind of the leader in our field. I feel like I'm working for him, and I've got to answer these questions for him, because he's that's what he's doing. If you check out, you'll find that Aubrey has spread everywhere. There are labs all over the world right now doing research under Aubrey de Grey's direction, or because they're just like-minded with him, they want to do it. That they are trying to answer some of the questions that Aubrey is asking. I'm not doing it for Aubrey right now. I'm doing it because I'm like-minded with Aubrey, but I'm looking forward to answering this question, which I already think I know the answer to. It's that cancer is something that's going to be caused by short telomeres, and lengthening telomeres with telomerase is going to decrease the risk of cancer. But I need to prove it to Aubrey. And that's I feel like a job I have. And when we do actually cure aging, I'm planning on sharing the stage with Aubrey de Grey because of everything he's done to make aging research all over the world much more acceptable and easier to do.
One thing I think is, upon reading your stuff and thinking about it and looking at his model, it seems that what you're doing will really help. And I think you just said this will really help with a lot of those other factors that are in, you know, the seven deadly things. A lot of those factors will be minimized just by lengthening your telomeres. They might still be issues and you got to identify them, but it's going to greatly reduce the risk of those other areas.
Well, if I knew that was true, believe me, I would be telling Aubrey to stop everything he's doing. But I don't know if that's true. I hope it's true. I hope, and there is some studies, especially by that same doctor that reversed aging in mice, Dr. Rhonda Pennell. He's done studies that show that a lot of the other causes of aging, like mitochondrial dysfunction and oxidative stress, get reduced when telomeres get long. But we don't know. So I think of aging as, we all have multiple sticks of dynamite burning inside of our cells, and we've got to put them all out. But first, which is the stick of dynamite with the shortest fuse? We've got to put that one out first. And I believe in humans and not in mice. I believe in humans, the stick of dynamite with the shortest fuse is telomeres. But just in case
Because if you don't solve that, it doesn't matter right on the other things, because this for sure has to be solved.
But I believe that if there's a good chance that if we do figure out how to put that fuse out on the stick of dynamite that's telomeres, the other ones will still burn. And so all the more reason why I support and encourage Aubrey to continue doing everything he's doing. I wouldn't stop anything until we absolutely know the answer. Yeah, no, I think. Yes.
Well, young people get sick, right? lengthening your telomeres or telomeres was the only answer, then wouldn't get sick.
There's a lot of things that cause us to get sick, not just telomeres. But, you know, they can be virus infections, they can be colds, you know, just bacteria infections, they can be genetic. That's why I always say somebody who's got the perfect genetics can live to be 125. But a lot of us are born with genetic problems that actually, in some cases, do have something to do with telomeres. Let's say multiple sclerosis or muscular dystrophy. That's an example where you have, you know, a gene called dystrophin that's actually not working correctly. And as a result, muscle cells die. Well, that's okay when you're young because you have other cells that can replace those cells. And so you're not even aware that you're suffering from muscular dystrophy. But because of all the increased cell division, I think I forgot to mention when I was talking about the zooming in on the human being to look at the telomeres, that the telomeres get shorter by a very fixed measurement every time a cell divides. So in the case of muscular dystrophy, where you have increased cell division to replace the dead cells that are dying all the time, you have accelerated telomere shortening. And eventually, like let's say by the time you're in your 40s or maybe late 30s, you've already exhausted all the telomeres in those muscle cells, and you can't replace those. You can't replace the dead cells anymore because the live cells, the telomeres are too short to divide again. And so if we could keep, so even though that's not really caused by telomere shortening, it's caused by the dystrophin gene, keeping telomeres long would make it so that a person with muscular dystrophy probably would never even know they had it if we could find a way to keep the telomeres long all the time. So yeah, there's a lot of causes of people getting sick. Telomeres are just one of them. But I think lengthening telomeres will help prevent a lot of the things that cause us to get sick, even if they aren't related to telomeres. So I think telomeres are going to be a good thing. But you know, I always say this will never be the absolute cure to immortality, okay, or mortality, or whatever it is. We will always have some way of killing us, because no matter what we do, if we jump off a cliff and crash into the rocks below, we're dead. But I'm glad to hear that there are people working on ways of even solving that problem, and that's whole brain emulation, Ronald Koenig is working on that. And he's actually getting a lot of funding and stuff to do that work. And that's where whole brain emulation is, where, let's say you're driving your car and you drive your car off the cliff. As soon as your airbag opens up, your brain is simultaneously downloaded or uploaded to a computer. You die, your body dies, but your brain stays intact on a computer. And then later, it's downloaded or uploaded. I get those mixed up. Downloaded or uploaded to another body, and you wake up in another body. Now, people say, well, is that still you?
Well, the question is consciousness issue.
I can't wait for the research to be get completed, because I'd rather have that than nothing. Like Ray Kurzweil says, he thinks that's 10 years away from now, at least being able to upload the brain to a computer. Maybe it's another 10 years after that before they figure out how to download it to another body. But that's one thing that's underway. And the other one is cryogenics or cryopreservation, where if you are going to die, if you know you have like cancer or heart disease or something like that, and you're on your deathbed, you can be frozen. Well, freezing has been solved. People know how to freeze people, but we don't know how to thaw them. That's the problem. And so another person named Dr. Greg Fay, he's probably the world's leader on solving that problem. And he's making some great progress. He's recently been able to at least thaw a human liver, I think it was, and have it be 100% intact. And it might not have been a human liver. It might have been a rabbit liver, now that I think of it. And it might have even been a kidney. I can't remember. But work is in this phase to have another way of possibly making us come close to immortality. My goal right now is to just keep us healthy as long as possible. That's all I want to do. And personally, I love living. I hope to, you asked me at the beginning of this question, do I want to live forever? Well, I don't know. I mean, ask me 300 years from now if I'm ready to die. I might say, no, I'm not ready. Give me another 300 years. And who knows? Will I ever reach a point where I want to die? I don't know. But I want that to be my choice, not nature's choice.
Well, there's been a lot of stuff in the news lately where they had a study done with yes. NASA twins. And it hit. Can you tell us about that?
Well, yeah, it got a lot of press release a few months ago because there was twins, and one went up into space and stayed up there for a year, and the other one stayed on Earth. And while he was in space, they found that his telomeres got longer. So it was all of a sudden all over the press that, boy, outer space might be the cure for aging, going up into space. But that it's pretty much been retracted now. The retraction, for some reason, hasn't gotten nearly the publicity that the actual statements did, so most people don't know about it. But it's actually more to the fact that measuring telomere length is still a new art, and it doesn't work very well. There are some companies, some approaches like measuring the percent of telomeres that are short that are working a lot better than others. But they all need to be improved on a bit before we can actually take an individual person, measure their telomeres, and tell them exactly how long their telomeres are and what that means. Telomere length measurement is really good for large population studies. You can do 100,000 people, and you can see that there's a correlation with a certain disease. But even that is taken to extremes. Let me say right now, don't start signing up to go to space, because I think it's just an artifact of the technique of measurement that is gotten this result. And it has not been published yet, so it has not had a chance to get scientific peer review yet. But I can tell you there's another study that I thought was kind of interesting that came out recently showing that measuring telomeres shows that if you're obese and if you're an obese woman and have a child, your child is going to be born with shorter telomeres than other kids would be. And so it was arguing that overweight women should not have children. Well, when you actually look at the data is all over the place. They had to do 1,000 different people to even find any kind of correlation. And when you have to do it, like when I looked at the actual graphs that's been now published, I saw that it was like telomere length measurement was so imprecise that it looked like somebody just took a machine gun and blasted holes into a piece of paper all over the place. But somehow there was still, people could make calculations and show that the average was showing a decrease in length the more overweight the woman was. But I think when you have something data that's that weak, you're missing something. You're missing that it's not it's probably not the weight of the woman that's causing the baby's telomeres to be short. It's probably something else that overweight women are more likely to do. Maybe overweight women are more likely to smoke, for instance, than thin women. And in that case, that's probably the cause of the telomeres being shorter in their children. But there's a lot of stuff that's coming out in the press right now that is being published way too quickly. There needs to be, I think, a tighter control on announcing some of these things when they really aren't true and can't even be reproduced sometimes with the authors that made the publication.
They just want to get published and maybe have a name for themselves. There was another study that stated that scientists at Salk discovered that genetic reprogramming will rejuvenate mice.
That was kind of exciting too, but it turned out that they treated mice for 2 days with something called genetic reprogramming, and the mice did show some rejuvenation. But on 4 days of treatment, they all had cancer. It was because of the fact that genetic reprogramming isn't a way of turning old cells into young cells. It's actually a way of de-differentiating cells. It's a way of turning it, like for trying to think of a good example. It's essentially turning a skin cell back into an egg cell. Okay, that's not making a cell younger. That's making a cell redifferentiate. And so if you were to turn a human, if you were to do genetic reprogramming on a whole human for a long period of time, you would find that that person actually became just a blob of cells sitting on the floor, because you've turned all the cells back into egg cells, and that's all they are. And so we've been doing genetic reprogramming for years. I think it was the late 90s, early 2000s when Dr. Yamamaka first discovered how to turn old cells, or let's say differentiated cells, into undifferentiated cells through a process that he calls induced pluripotency, which is also the name for genetic reprogramming. And so a lot of people have thought about, well, shoot, what would happen if we did genetic reprogramming on a whole animal? And any, you know, graduate student would figure out, well, that's not going to work. That's going to cause the animal to become a blob of cells. But so these people did the study anyway, and they did get some results. And they say they did detect that 4 days all the mice got cancer, because cancer essentially is cells that just grow uncontrollably, like egg cells do. And they said more research is needed. But what was missing from their analysis is that we've already known for many, many years. In fact, I've even co-authored publications with a company called BioTime on the subject, that genetic reprogramming causes the telomerase of the gene to turn on, to do exactly what we're doing, and to lengthen telomeres. And so their rejuvenation was probably because of the telomerase being turned on and the telomeres getting lengthened. But because they were doing more than just turning on telomeres, they were doing everything else under the sun that could cause a cell to de-differentiate, they were also getting all these other side effects. So I think the solution, there's been very little controversy about this, because people just don't understand the role of genetic reprogramming. But if they're going to do further research on what they're doing, what they actually have to do is they have to work with us to figure out how to induce telomerase, because that's the only reason they were seeing rejuvenation, is because telomerase got induced and the telomeres got lengthened. But right away they got cancer, but not because of the telomeres and not because of the telomerase. It was because of all the other things that are underway.
Because when you change it back to a cell or a egg cell, that induces telomere lengthening.
I shouldn't be using really the word egg cell, but for the general population, that makes more sense. We're talking about something equivalent of primordial germ cells or embryonic stem cells. and they get reduced back to something like that, which is the cell in our body that is always telomerase positive, because it's the cell that passes on from one generation to the next. And if those cells can't age, if they were to age, we would be extinct as a species, because our children would be born older than we are, their children would be born older than them, and we'd be gone by now. So those cells, they have everything that makes them immortal, which is keeping the telomeres long. but they have all the other problems of they're not differentiated. They're not a tissue. They're not like skin. They're not eyes. They're not hair. They're just cells that are close to being just like bacteria that are dividing in a culture.
Well, there's also been talk about the Goldilocks principle, where if telomeres get too long, then it's not good. Or if they're too short, which you've really established here, it's not good. What is the deal with that? If telomeres get too long, are there problems with
this
that?
This is another example of people making press releases and publishing stuff in the newspapers and things before the scientific publications are actually peer-reviewed. But what had happened? Yeah, a lot of press came out recently saying that long telomeres are bad for you. But when you actually read the paper, all you find out is that when you make the telomeres really long using telomerase, you actually see that the telomeres would then shorten a bit due to some process that exists inside the cells that chew telomeres down to a certain length. Well, we've known about that for 20 years. Okay. But that's not a negative. I mean, the telomeres are still longer. But there's a thing called trimming. So when you make telomeres really long, the cell has, let's say, a way of polishing off the ends to make them neater. That's not a bad thing, I mean, especially when the telomeres are still much longer than they would have been anyway. But for some reason, so the authors found out that when they made the telomeres really long, the telomeres got a little bit shorter, but never got really short again. They still were really long. They just got a little bit shorter. And they published that as that's a bad thing, saying that the telomeres shouldn't be really long, but it's not. We've done studies for years. And for instance, a lot of mice, I said mice don't age by telomere shortening. And the studies that were done by Dr. Rhonda Pinnell, he had to use engineered mice that did age by telomere shortening. But most mice don't age by telomere shortening. They have telomeres so long you can't measure them. But every time we've done experiments where by gene therapy techniques, we've lengthened telomeres using the enzyme telomerase, we have never seen anything that's unhealthy about long telomeres. It's, in fact, I don't think anybody's ever going to see anything unhealthy. Long telomeres are great. They don't do anything negative that anybody's ever detected. The only thing that this one paper found out was that they get trimmed back a little bit, but that's not a negative. That's probably, we're going to find out, is actually even a positive to make the telomeres, let's say, better shaped, for instance. So yeah, I think people need to, because I get hundreds of questions from people and emails every time one of these studies come out, like the astronauts or the genetic reprogramming or the telomeres being too long is bad for you. There's other things like, well, I don't want to go into all of them, but I get hundreds of questions and I have to answer them. But I try to always encourage people to go to the real sources, learn about PubMed, PubMed, which is publications in medicine. To be included in the list, you have to be peer reviewed. Your study has to be scientifically peer reviewed. It doesn't mean that every study in PubMed is correct, because you'll find still both sides of every story being true. But you can find that more likely that if you look at all the studies, you're going to find out that the ones that are correct outnumber the ones that are wrong, probably 100-fold, 10 to 100-fold. So I always say go to PubMed, and you can just Google PubMed to find its location, PubMed. That's where people should really be learning what's true and what's not true.
Well, I have a question. I thought it was really interesting that mice have super long telomeres. Are other animals like mice, and do they have other factors that's like a clock that makes them die as well, that makes humans
yes,
different?
Yes, now I believe that mice actually, I don't even know if I want to call what mice have aging. Mice just have a lot of oxidative stress and mitochondria dysfunction. I compare it to when a mouse is born, there's somebody inside of them shooting a machine gun in every direction possible. And the mice just live long enough until their bodies don't fall apart from all the damage. So that's what mice are. Mice don't have telomere shortening. But when Dr. Rhonda Pinnell created mice that do have telomere shortening, and he could re-lengthen them with telomerase, he actually found that these mice did age a lot like humans. They started having very physical characteristics like humans when they get old, like male pattern baldness and et cetera, which regular mice don't have. But so it turns out, when like scientists at University of Texas Southwestern, specifically Jerry Shea and Woody Wright, when they did a survey of animals that age by telomere shortening, they found that actually very few do. The list is quite short. It's humans, other primates, dogs, cats, horses, sheep, pig, and deer. They're the ones that age by telomere shortening. Rodents, like mice, they don't age by telomere shortening at all. And then there's a lot of animals on this planet that have no detectable aging at all. Lobsters was the first one that was discovered. And, you know, you ask yourself, why didn't we know this before? And it's because nobody ever asked the question, how long do animals live, until the time of Darwin, when people started taking a big interest in these kind of things. And so, and the only way to tell how old an animal is in most cases is to be there when it's born and then watch it and see how long it goes. And so, so after Darwin's time, people started doing this, and lo and behold, lobsters are, you know, 150 year old and over, and still not showing any signs of aging. The same is true for tortoises, certain types of whales. I think the humpback whale is the one. Clams. Clams was interesting because people have identified that clams do have something equivalent to trees on a rings on a tree, where you can count the number of rings and determine how old a tree is. You can't do that with most animals, but with the clams, you can, because every year they get this new stripe on their shell. And people have been finding now that, that they can find clams over 500 years old. And the only thing that these animals have in common, that the ones that have no detectable aging, is every one of them have telomeres produced in all their cells, and they don't have telomere shortening. And unlike mice, they also don't have the severe oxidative stress and mitochondria dysfunction problems. So humans, by the way, we don't have severe oxidative stress and mitochondria dysfunction problems either. We do have them a bit, but I do feel that that's something that we probably will have to solve. And as I already mentioned, Dr. Rhonda Pennell has already showed that keeping telomeres long actually at least partially solves that problem. But humans, when we stress ourselves, we actually boost our antioxidant levels, which will get rid of the free radicals. And it, the result is that somebody who exercises all the time, let's say like a runner who runs every day, or at least 6 days a week or something like that, is going to, if they've been doing it for many, many years, they're going to find out that their oxidative stress is actually lower than other people that don't. And a lot of people think that's the exact opposite of what's real. A lot of people think that when you run a lot, you actually increase your oxidative stress, but they don't take into account that you're, that we boost our antioxidant levels, which actually negate the increased free radicals, which causes our oxidative stress to be less. So the same isn't true in mice. Well, you put a mouse on a treadmill and that mouse is going to die much faster because you boost its oxidative stress higher, which is already extremely high. And, but you don't boost its antioxidants. And so it doesn't compensate. So over-exercising a mouse is bad, but over-exercising a human is good. I mean, it depends, since I got on the subject, depends on the type of exercise too. You don't want to be one of those runners that kill yourself every time you run, finishing races on your hands and knees, throwing up. That's not good for you. But you know, when I compete in like marathons and ultra marathons and stuff like that, I find out that most of the runners are out there just for the sightseeing. They're having a party while they're out running, and they go slow. They take pictures. They never stress themselves. For instance, when I'm running ultra marathon, my heart rate never gets above 120, because I'm just taking it easy, enjoying nature at the time. And that kind of stuff keeps your telomeres long. Whereas I think, some of the really fast, serious runners that are look really skinny, like sticks and bones and whatever, they might be accelerating their aging. But yeah.
Well, let's get into a different topic, sort of. I mean, it's still this topic, obviously, but have you received any pushback from activists worried about what this could do to the population if we actually started providing telomere lengthening to the general public?
Yes, I mean, maybe 1 in 10 times when I give a presentation, I'll have somebody asking a question about that. But I think the answer is pretty clear that things are bad now, as I mentioned earlier. I mean, we have a lot of misery in this world that people just don't know about because these people in hospices and assisted living homes are secret. They're locked away from everybody. So we just don't know about it. But life is pretty miserable right now for most people. So we already have a problem. And yes, there will be new problems. Overpopulation is one of them that might occur or may not occur. A lot of people believe that overpopulation won't occur because of the fact that all life forms have been shown that when they start to get high populations, they just decrease their birth rate. I mean, the only reason we have a baby boom is because after World War II, the government got on TV and told everybody, start making babies to replace the loss. And so we have a lot of baby boomers. But when you look in the future, things are going to die down a lot, of course, unless I cure aging, because a lot of the baby boomers are going to start dying. Plus, all the baby boomers are going to be in by 2050. It's estimated that 40% of the population is going to be over 65. That's going to be horrible. And the problems are going to be worse in Japan and South Korea than anywhere else. Because when 40% of the population is over 65, if we don't have some way of taking care of these people, because they, most of them won't be able to take care of themselves, we're in real bad shape. I mean, it's like that for, is, even though 40% of the population is going to be over 65, only 40% of the population is going to even be in the workforce. So that's going to leave nobody to actually do caregiving for these elderly, unhealthy people. So we have to figure out some type of solution or the problem is going to get worse. But the bottom line is 100 years from now, when we have a cure for aging and we have these problems, and I haven't even addressed what the worst problem is, when we have these problems, nobody's going to say we should ban the cure for aging, because everybody's going to realize the cure for aging is good. We don't want to go back to what it was before. And the biggest problem that I see is, how will the young ever compete for jobs if the old never get sick and have to retire? And it's going to be a old person's dominated world, and we're going to have to find solutions to that. But I'm excited about a whole other field that I haven't even talked about, and that's the robotic industry. And I actually believe that the robotic industry is going to solve our problems for the caregiving. We even if we don't cure aging, all the 65-year-old and over that are needing care, I think we're going to have robots that do a better job than humans ever did. Plus, I think a lot of people in the future are just going to sit back and let robots do the work anyway. So it's, I don't know how things are going to change, and whether people are going to be fighting over jobs or not, or just letting the robots have the jobs, I don't know. But we don't know what's going to happen. I just believe no matter what's going to happen, everybody's going to be happy with it, even with the problems that exist. They're not going to go back to what we have today.
Well, where do you see the greatest amount of support for your work? Who are the ones that are just really enamored with what you're doing, besides someone like me? What is the makeup of the people that are most supportive?
99% of the world is very interested in what we're doing. It's maybe less than 1% of the people that actually don't support us and don't think that we should be doing what we're doing. But 99% of the world would love to see us succeed. The problem is that especially since 2008, when the global financial crisis hit, even the billionaires don't have money available to invest. It's really hard to dig up money. I've had at least like 7 billionaires here in my conference room meeting with me, saying that they are going to help me find investments, you know, because they really want us to succeed at what we're doing. But so we get support from everybody. It's just where's the money? Well, fortunately, let's say before 2008, I had very enthusiastic investors that used to just pay the bills every month. And we were spending like $1 million a month. And so they were just very enthusiastic about curing their aging. They had money. I was up to 50 investors at one time, then got down to 2 investors, but they were very enthusiastic. It's just the global financial crisis prevented them and others from being able to invest anymore. So it's really, really hard to find funding. And then it's also really hard to educate those people that have the funding to get them to realize that they are actually thinking wrong in terms, like companies, I don't want to mention names, but there are lots of different organizations that have been started by super wealthy multi-billionaires that are working to cure aging. They're kind of like not really surveying the whole field. They just think they have an idea and they're spending money on it without realizing that maybe there's something better they could be doing with their money. I personally think our funding problems are now solved, because our biggest supporter is on the phone with us right now. His name is Jay Park.
And that's all the time we have, but you can get the rest of the show on Friday on the Global Star Satellite. It'll play at 3 p.m. Eastern time. And there is a link to it on my website at sarahwestall.com where you can listen to it live when it airs. Or you can also get it on my YouTube channel. Both episodes will be posted there, as well as both episodes on my website and on all the different podcast channels my show is listed on, which is about 90, plus all the popular ones, plus a lot of others. So you should be able to find it out there. If not, always go to sarahwestall.com, where I have 150 articles and episodes that I have listed there, and you can get all of them whenever you want. So please go there and sign up for my newsletter and support the show by subscribing to YouTube. So I hope everybody has an amazing day.
You've been listening to Business Game Changers with host Sarah Westall. Tune in each Monday at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, as Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in Mondays at 12 noon Pacific time and learn more about Sarah at sarahwestall.com today.